Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday. Infield goers. I'm just looking at some really fun pictures. I love coming into this office that houses all of the publicity photos. Jerry Fruchthoff, and then, of course, later Jim McHugh, two of the absolute legendary track photographers in the game, along with Colin East, father and son, Adam and Bob, and of course the Cody. That's a feature. Boy, I wandered right into a segment idea. track photography, right? There's so many funny things. And then every year I find pictures that I send off to people. I just sent a picture to Brian Williamson, who got a kick out of a picture of Harvey Veneer, and had to be from, we're guessing, 83 when he ran Playfellow in one of the more famous Preaknesses, the 1983 Preakness, deputed testimony. And, of course, the deputed spelling. Happy to be here for the Tuesday get-together. We got a busy 3 hours, and we've got early look at Saturday's card now. We've got everything drawn yesterday, the two features. The Black-Eyed Susan. Black-Eyed Susan is really good and really interesting. Preakness feels, you know, a little bit more straightforward, and you know, kind of similar to, interestingly, a little similar to what we had in the Oaks 2 weeks ago, right? You got a very clear set of favorites and likely candidates, starting with favored Epicenter, of course, and, you know, then early voting, Secret Oath, the filly. It's actually an interesting anniversary today that I will reference. I'm always imbued with history whenever we come here. The place is dripping with it, to say the least. And since I mentioned this, if you go back to 1915, which was the 40th Preakness, they always talk about Nellie Morse winning the Preakness. And she's the last filly before Rachel. But Rhine Maiden, 1915, on this date, May 17th, 1915, Rhine Maiden, one of the, there were four. The amazing thing was there were four fillies in about a 15 or 18 year period, from like the mid-aughts, like 1905 to Nellie Morse in 24, in that range, 1908 maybe. Four fillies won this race in like 15, 18 years, whatever it was, and then there wasn't another filly winner until Rachel. It's kind of weird. And then Swiss Skydiver. And perhaps Secret Oath. Certainly plenty of people excited about the prospect of another filly in the Preakness. So, but quite simply, early voting, Secret Oath, Epicenter, the major principles, fold in Simplification, fourth out of the Derby. Those feel like your big four. And then, yeah, there's some of the, you know, some of the potential upsetters. And we'll talk actually to Ken McPeak. Got a couple of things for Kenny, and it occurred to me that it might be fun to get a read on Creative Minister, especially given those that listened on Friday to Paul Matisse. And if you missed Paul, I would recommend you go to the pod or to the archive and pull it up. Creative Minister for McPeak. the Creative Cause cult. 10 to 1. One of the real potential interlopers in here. So we'll talk to Kenny, and we'll also get Dash Attack's win covered in the Long Branch, and we'll catch up on Kenny's plans for everybody else coming out of Tis the Bomb, of course, and Rattle and Roll. So looking forward to a visit with Kenny. We're also going to visit with Trevor McCarthy this hour. In fact, Trevor, in about 10 minutes, I promised that as part of that conversation with Grim Motion yesterday, that we would try to connect. So let me give you the Preakness and Black Eyed Susan update and the specifics. Here you go. Simplification drew the rail with Johnny Velasquez taking over, given that Jose Ortiz was committed to early voting. You do wonder if that means that Johnny might be, and of course from the rail draw, might be a little bit more forward in this spot. And of course, came from the 15 position, about 15th early in the Derby before putting in the run and losing plenty of ground. But certainly a good effort to get beaten 3 lengths and change. So simplification from the rail. 6 to 1, Creative Minister, as mentioned, fourth start, coming in with the back-to-back wins, the maiden win and the allowance win at Churchill, which, as you heard from Paul Matisse, was among the, maybe the fastest race on Paul's Fig of Derby Day. The Brian Hernandez Jr., Sticks, of course. Fenwick, who jumped back in for Kevin McCaffin, and Fenwick, a curling colt out of the Malibu Moon mare that had come out of consideration and then jumps back in, is going to be a rank outsider at 50 to 1. Florence Giroux picks up, and you would think that given that he broke his maiden wire to wire at Tampa, in a good effort, too, that was, you know, they got an 88 buyer, then tried the bluegrass, and that did not go well. Kind of chased early and stopped badly. But Fenwick in here, 50 to 1 from the three hole with Giroux. Secret Oath, Luis Saez, of course, off the Oaks win, the Arrogate Philly, 9 to 2. Third choice in this Preakness for Wayne Lucas and Bryland Farm, Mitchell's. Early voting draws the 5, Jose Ortiz for Chad, and Seth Klarman coming home to Baltimore, where he was reared, and just literally in the shadow of Old Hilltop, just down the block. And early voting, 7 to 2, second choice. Happy Jack, that Paul thought might have a look in here and might have been dirtied up out of the Derby. 14th didn't really make much headway, but Paul thought there was plenty of merit. And, of course, being a son of Oxbow, who won this race famously, and before the Kentucky Oaks win by Secret Oath for Wayne Lucas, his last classic weekend-type win, and that with Gary Stevens. It was a pretty amazing day here, actually, that Oxbow win. So Calumet's Happy Jack with Tyler Gaffleone for Doug O'Neill, and 30 to 1 to maybe boost the exotics, potentially. And he does add blinkers. Armagnac, another late addition, Armagnac team, the Quality Road Colt for SF and Starlight and Matticat and company, coming out of a very nice allowance win. Interested to see the figs. 12 to 1, Arad Ortiz gets aboard, and in the two races where Armagnac has been successful, he's gone wire to wire. So that's an issue. That's a question You know, his second career start before he tried the San Felipe, and he basically popped and stopped in that spot. Santa Anita Derby kind of ran evenly and just kind of went around and lost ground late, but then improved in that allowance win a week ago Sunday. So Armagnac, 12-1 with IRAD for Tim Yakteen. Epicenter, your favorite, of course, from the 8-hole, 6-5 with Joel Rosario, and feels like it's an advantageous spot for Joel to set up shop. Interesting to see how, you know, how much he'll test early voting, who you just gotta figure is sending and establishing the lead from midfield. And Epicenter, I imagine, will be in fairly close quarters. It'll be interesting to see, again, if Armagnac, too, how aggressive IRAD is with him, considering, you know, the success that he's had, his two wins. It's really notable. I mean, the two wire-to-wire wins by open lengths both times, and his other three starts, he's been absolutely just drilled. I mean, I don't really worry about the career debut, but San Felipe did not make the lead, got beat 27 lengths, and then in the Santa Anita Derby, never sniffed the lead and ended up beating 12. So it's pretty clear what Armagnac's, you know, best approach is stylistically. But Joel Rosario might, I think, you know, be a little closer, you know, more like a Louisiana Derby positioning, you would think. I don't think he necessarily goes to the front, but I think he keeps close tabs on early voting and potentially Armagnac. And then Skippy Longstocking, who's a nice enough, you know, is a nice enough horse. This is a horse that nobody's really, I think, talked about or even had much, you know, much analysis of. But, you know, third in the wood, he's kind of a stalk and go type. You know, an allowance winner at the mile in the eighth, and that came at Gulfstream. Interesting. I'll join the crowd that hasn't really thought much about Skippy Longstocking and his involvement here. Junior Alvarado down to ride. So there's your Preakness, and obviously Epicenter, the focus, right? 6-5. Or even money, maybe. We'll start to talk about it. The Black Eyed Susan is going to take a lot more. Yeah, I think we know cut and dry how the Preakness unfolds and, or, you know, gets established. But this Black Eyed Susan is really fun, and 13 horse field. So some draw questions. Most notably, I would think, for Favor, the Pletcher Stone Street filly, coming out of the Fairgrounds Oaks, last seen. But a quick rundown here before we get to Trevor McCarthy. Graham Motion, who talked to you about Divine Huntress yesterday. In fact, just if you were listening to the replay, just in the last 40 minutes, give or take. Coming out of the Gazelle, Flavian gets aboard and leads from the rail, 15-1 on Divine Huntress for Eclipse and Partners. Divining Rod, and of course, Divining Rod is a Maryland bred, and most notably, Country Life Farms Divining Rod. So a big opportunity to showcase this daughter. Missy Greer, Danny Garkin shows up with a maiden winner that seems to be improving, a Nyquist filly. West Paces Racing and Flying P. Louis Saez has been the only rider for Missy Greer. She's 20-1 from the two-hole Miss Yearwood. Ian Wilk shows up with a Will Take Charge for Keith and Margaret Long. It was a homebred of theirs. Broke the maiden at Churchill leading up to Derby, I think it was opening night, actually, that Miss Yearwood broke her maiden. Midnight Stroll for John Terranova and Matt Gatsis and Randy Hill and partners. Javier Castellano back aboard, rode her back in September. In her second career start, she is on a little bit of a roll. Broke her maiden at Tampa, came back and shortened up, actually. Turned back in the... she's a Florida bred, so she was able to participate in the Florida Cup races. So Midnight Stroll for John, and Not This Time filly. You're looking at 15-1. Beguine and 12-1, very, very attractive for Danny Pites. This is the Gunrunner filly, of course, that ran Yagiri to a neck in the fantasy. Jose Ortiz takes over for Cisco Arrieta, and Beguine, a lot of interest, and frankly, it'd be wonderful for Danny Pites to win a race like this. It would be equally wonderful for Hammy Smith to win here at Pimlico as he sends the very nice and the streaking Luna Bell, the Great Notion filly that Hammy and Deb Green co-own. And, of course, her father, Fred. Hammy told you about the backstory. She's on a five-race win streak, and it would be really one of those classic Maryland Black-Eyed Susan Day, Preakness Day weekend stories if Luna Bell, 9-2, could win the Black-Eyed Susans. Distinctly possible for Chad, and this is an up-and-comer that had frankly kind of forgotten about. Peter Bradley and partners, and Jack Oxley bred this Carlin filly. She tried the Alcibiades as a maiden and chased home Juju's Map. Chad basically put her away for the winter, brought her back at Keeneland, and she broke her maiden promptly, and she's interesting in here and is 6-1. This is why this race is so much fun. You got prices, you got some up-and-comers. Very, very interesting. Candy Light is the other Grand Motion, coming off a second to Luna Bell in the Beyond the Wire. And congratulations to the Beyond the Wire team. That is the Maryland-based aftercare and retraining and placement organization. And they're being recognized at the Alibi Breakfast with a... award of merit, and they do a fabulous job. They must be about maybe 5 years old now, and you know, much like the Take Two program in New York, been a huge success. Beyond the Wire, they've placed hundreds of horses in the few years they've been operating, and it's very nice for them to be acknowledged. So Candy Light off a little freshening, and Graham told you about this one, Fortune Racing, and she's coming in. She's been off really since that Beyond the Wire. So she's 20-1. Interstate Daydream, who I don't want to say she flopped in the Ashland. She was third in the grade one. It was more like Nest kind of overwhelmed everybody. But Interstate Daydream off that allowance win at Oakland did not necessarily make a forward step that you might have anticipated. In fact, you could pretty clearly see that she had regressed. So it was a wet, kind of a wet fast track is how they identified it. She has worked nicely since the Ashland. Interstate Daydream is 6-1 in here for Brad Cox, Florent Giroux aboard. Adair Manor ended up being made the favorite, and she couldn't make the Oaks. And of course, Desert Dawn. If you're looking for flattery, or a runner that was flattered by a performance, certainly Desert Dawn's effort in the Oaks speaks well of Adair Manor, who comes in here from Michael Lund Peterson. Sean McCarthy, one of the beneficiaries of the distribution of the Baffert Barn horses, and Adair Manor, Johnny V sticks, and she's really done little wrong since the calendar turned. Took her a while to break her maiden, but when she did it nicely, stretching out to a mile at Santa Anita, and then crushed the Las Virgenes as well. So, Adair Manor is your Black Eyed Susan favorite, leaving from the 10 hole and 5-2. Radio days for Shug, and we had that conversation with Shug, and we talked about, you know, the Busher, where she really disappointed, seemed to run okay in the Beaumont. Nobody was being Matarea that day. Now she stretches out to two turns. The gun runner out of the Sky Mesa mare for Joe Allen, and Joel sticks. And you're going to get 12-1. Those who still believe and are going to keep trying radio days and sticking with her, you're going to get a price. And then Favor, as mentioned, outposted a little bit in the 12-hole, 8-1. Tyler Gaffalione for Todd and Barbara Banky. This is the pioneer of the Nile filly that ran an okay third, chasing Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection in the Fairground Oaks. But she kind of got going at the beginning of the year. Broke her maiden in January, came back in a nice allowance effort before the stake try. So Favor, and she's 8-1. And again, this is why this is such a fun wagering affair. Because I don't think the favorite's got a win here at all, Adair Manor. She's okay. But there's a lot going on in this. Morning matchup for Butchie Reed, the Central Banker, Pennsylvania bred. And this for LC Racing and Cash's King and Gary Barber. And Butchie brings her back out of the Gazelle. She had won at Parks back in March. She won that main line and did it well. I mean, she's certainly an active filly. This is her 11th career start already for the PA bred. So Frankie Pennington coming down from Philadelphia to Ryder. So stick with her. All right, so there's your field of 13, and it's a fun group. The Black-Eyed Susan, the Georgie Mitchell Black-Eyed Susan. We'll look at some of the other action for Saturday in just a little bit. And we'll see if Casey, yeah, you can reach for Trevor. He's expecting us now, and actually we're 2 minutes late. But that's not that unusual. Let me make sure that number's right. I said yes, but is it? Yes, that is correct. Go ahead. what else we got? Well, I can kill a minute or two before we get to him. I mentioned Beyond the Wire. There you go. Here's the thing I saved. Let's see. Launched in 2017, so it is 5 years old. They have placed 500 horses, the Beyond the Wire team. It's really, really terrific. Johnny, I'm just thinking about the conversation with Johnny yesterday. The Alibi Breakfast is Thursday, at which I'm slightly surprised because I thought it was going to be tomorrow. Because they're racing on Thursday, so all right, so Thursday. I hear Trevor McCarthy in the background. Trevor, good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Trevor, congratulations. We talked to Graham yesterday, and very happy for you. First grade one win, and came as a surprise to a number of people, including Graham. But talk about Saturday and the win.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge win. It was great for the whole Motion team to win my first grade one for them. Look, it was a tough race. And this horse really has been running in some tough races in Europe, and his first race here in America at Aqueduct was kind of just a throw-out race, but it was way too short. It was a mile and 16th, and he got off bad, and he came flying the last eighth of a mile. And to anybody else, it really kind of looked like just an ordinary race. But to me, I like the way he finished up the last eighth of a mile, and he made up a lot of ground, and he galloped out really good. So the other day, going into Man of War, it was kind of a big step, but look, I kind of rode the race wanting to ride it as I would finish third and try and get a piece of it, and I ended up winning it, so it was a huge outcome.
You know, some people, based on the way the wagering went, some people thought maybe he was in there to help set up Easter, and Easter took the money, and I somewhat can understand just based on the presence of Flavian, but this is a horse that comes out of this race and just could not have impressed more, and he instantly stamps himself as a real important distance stake runner going forward this summer.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people misjudge this horse because he's been running over in Europe and he's been running in some really tough races, but he was a winner at Royal Ascot. He was a winner over good soft ground. And, that's what he got the other day.
You win clear by a length. Gaffeau was chasing you home, and you wouldn't let Joel get to you.
Yeah, I was just turned for home. I wanted to, my horse kicked on pretty well, and I was kind of surprised how good of a kick he gave me. But with the slow pace, I kind of just wanted to make a little bit of a middle move, so there at the 5/16 pole, I just had him pick it up and get into a good rhythm and kind of get the jump on those guys a little bit because I knew they'd be coming pretty hot and steamy. So to get his momentum built up and that last eighth of a mile really just kind of be aggressive on him to hold Gufo off was huge.
Well, you got yourself a horse that's going to show up in a lot of Grade 1 spots looking ahead to the Manhattan, and you would think he'd be a candidate for things like the UN and races like that. We get to back to Saratoga, the Bernard Baruch and the Sword Dancer, etc. So you got yourself an ideal horse going forward, and we can use that actually to talk about Joe Migliori and all the success that you've been having, and since I'm down at Pimlico, we got to fold in your origin story. What did your dad say? Let me start there. What did your dad have to say after the race?
He was really thrilled. He's never won a Grade One, so for him it was kind of a closing chapter.
Wow.
In his book, to see me win a Grade One, so that was great. Look, it was just a huge day for everybody, the connections, family, and it was a dream come true for us.
And of course, your father's career a little shortened just by his size, and I'm actually shocked that he didn't win a Grade One, and that it's really just by circumstance because he won races that have now become Grade Ones, like the Cotillion and the Pennsylvania Derby.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's been races here in Maryland as well, and people said to me, "Oh, I can't believe you haven't won a Grade One yet." And I said, "Well, honestly, I probably won a bunch of them that used to be Grade Ones in Maryland, like the DC International and the Laurel Futurity."
That's right.
But, they just, now it's just different, there's different races and different, grades and different money, and things change, I guess. So, for him, he got to win a lot of major stake races in Delaware, and he never got to win the Delaware Handicap, which was a Grade One, and at that time when he was riding, and for us to get a Grade One win for our family, it was huge.
Well, and you bring up a very germane point because, in fact, Andy Serling and I were talking about it, and he said, what races in Maryland right now could he have won? I mean, because you've been riding 6-7 years, right?
Eight? This is my 10th year.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Time is slow.
I'm amazed.
This is year number 10.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't realize that. It's funny though. I did notice. It just so happens that part of the conversation yesterday with Graham, I always look ahead and see, what races, what horses trainers have entered coming up, and I noticed that you've got you're going to ride Mrs. Postman in the first on Thursday at Belmont, and she's a sister of Tintype Gal, who I think you won the Boiling Springs on Tintype Gal for Graham.
Correct. Yes, I did. I did win that stakes.
Well, there you go, and here it is. Boy, that goes back to 2016. So
yeah, it's pretty funny now. A lot of these horses I rode or went on, and I'm starting to see that their babies are coming up. I went on the mothers and or went on the fathers, which were really cool, and it's fun. It makes it even it's interesting.
Well, when you start to see that, you're reaching certain age or a certain status point in your career. The trainers, when I have these conversations with trainers and they talk about having trained the fourth dam, they realize they're getting a little old at that point when you start seeing third and fourth generations. So I'm excited for you on this. I mean, talk about that period, the transition, and the move to New York. And you and I have talked over the years. You've had a couple of significant injuries. Knock on wood, you've been able to avoid. It feels like that little bad patch is behind you.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of experimenting the last couple of years. I went out to California. I was in New York and then California and then back to New York. And, to me, I was the leading rider in Maryland for so long, and I just wanted to kind of venture out and challenge myself and see what I was capable of before settling down with a family and kind of figuring out, where my place was. And you always have that dream as a jockey, and this is why I started being a jockey, is to ride in grade one races and to find a really good horse and to be an elite rider. And to me, I just said at this period of time in my life, I want to kind of see where that stands, can I make it in a colony, as tough as New York? Can I win some grade one races and stuff? So for me, over the past year, 2 years, I've just been trying to figure out my place of where I could make it. And, if I'm going to be able to compete and sustain some business in that caliber of racing.
Well, and talk about the relationship with Joe, too. I mean, Rich, his dad is going to be on at 10 o'clock, Rich Migliori, and Rich has, really been just thrilled with the success you guys have been having. It's not misplaced confidence either. I mean, the way you rode all the way through the winter, it was pretty obvious, that you're here to stay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now, with the winter time, it's a nice stepping stone to get into the New York trainers and owners and kind of build some relationships with them. And, there's been plenty of guys there like Kendrick Carmouche and my brother-in-law, Dylan Davis, who have kind of been patient over the years. And it takes a little bit of time to break into, for them to really start riding you at Belmont and Saratoga. But I'm willing to do it. And with Joe, he's a guy that's been really hardworking and really passionate and dedicated to the sport. And, when he called me about taking my book, it was a big question mark. And I kind of was like, man, this next move for me is going to be a really important move. It kind of needs to work. And if it doesn't work, then I'm going to have to take a step back and leave that elite circuit. But if it does work, you know, I can make it here. And with Joey, you know, he's just come so far, so quick, and right from the get-go, I could tell he was just so passionate, and he believed in me as a jockey, which was great. And, you know, he had that hungry, kind of aggressive look at the sport, and knew what he had to do, you know, for the job. And his dad has plenty of agents that he has gone through, so Joe kind of knew how, you know, seeing his father, you know, dealing with agents, knows what is expected from the job. And look, he's done an unbelievable job, and hopefully we can just keep it going and keep the momentum carrying all throughout the spring and summer.
Well, you actually bring up a natural follow-up question, which is from our original conversations when we talked about, you know, remember you telling me about, you know, having conversations nightly after a day of riding, you know, with your dad. Then you fold in Katie Bug, you and Katie Davis get married, and so now you got Robbie, you know, to advise you, and then you get Joe Migliori. So now you got Rich advising you. So you've got like a panel of experts, and then frankly, between Katie and Jackie and Dylan, there's like a whole jury of people that are deciding, you know, what you should have done when you don't win.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's great. You know, it's great that I get it from all angles, and it's helpful. And sometimes it'll be a little overwhelming, but you know, I understand everybody's very, you know, they want to see you do good, and they want to help you. And it's nice to kind of look at things differently. And you have, you know, lots of different riders who have different techniques and different styles, and they can kind of just piece it together, which is great. And you know, it worked out nice. You know, Richie, I just developed such a good relationship with him even before Joe took my book last year over the winter time and at the springtime of Belmont, and we were always back and forth communicating, and we got to be really good friends even before I took Joe. So even more now, he's just been extremely helpful.
Talk about being a father, too. What's that been like?
It's been great. You know, when the alarm goes off at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, I look over at my kid and I say, well, I got to go out there and earn it, you know. And she's been a huge motivation. And, you know, if it's a bad day and we don't have any winners, or, you know, we just got unlucky and we got beat a couple noses and heads, I can come home and my daughter's there smiling at me, and, you know, she kind of takes that all away, which is the best medicine I could ask for.
I love it. Well, you know, looking ahead here, Preakness weekend here in Baltimore, but you'll be in New York, and anything that you see coming up this week that we need to know about, some of these mounts?
You know, it's always open, but I think we're live this weekend, and hopefully we can get the job done and all the horses are ready. But, I think it might be a good weekend, you know. It's always nice when getting opportunities from some good trainers and to ride some good horses when the guys go out of town. And hopefully we can just make the most of it.
Well, and boy, Joe's got you—he's got you riding for everybody. I mean, just looking ahead to Thursday and Friday, you're riding for Mott, Clement, and Chris Engelhart, Tim Hills, Joe Lee, and Graham, which we talked about, Brittany Russell, and of course you rode against her husband for a long time, Sheldon. So full cards the next couple of days, and we'll see about the weekend. Trevor, I'm just delighted for you, and you must have really been touched by the outpouring of congratulations and all the people that I'm sure were reaching out to congratulate you on the first great one and first of many.
Yeah, most definitely. It was super heartwarming, and you know, after all the hard work and dedication that I put in, and, you know, for people to really respect that and to reach out and congratulate me and, you know, just take that time, you know, a 2-minute text, you know, meant the world to me. So I couldn't thank these people enough. You know, there's so many people, you know, if I, you know, they helped me so much along the way, and, you know, I couldn't have been in the spot I'm in, you know, without them. It's just, there's so much to be thankful for.
Well, you've been off to, it's only been, what, 3 weeks at Belmont, and you've already got 2 graded stake wins. You also won with Virginia Joy as well. So already it's a notable meet, and the rest of the Belmont season lies ahead. Then a summer at Saratoga and so forth. So, Trevor McCarthy, congratulations. Continued success, and I'm not sure when we're running next with Scherzando, but I got to thank you again, and I'm looking forward to the next start. It may be actually on the Friday before Belmont, so maybe we'll get a photo. That's, you know, that's what I'm looking for with you.
Yeah, that was good. He ran really good last time, and like you said, now this time it kind of stinks. He was 25-1. It would have been nice to win on him at 25-1. I doubt he'll be 25-1 this time, but we'll get the win.
Exactly. I never worry about that. I just want a safe trip and the occasional W. And he's knocking on the door. And your ride made a big difference. That was a terrific result. So, looking forward to it. We will see you. We'll see you soon in the coming weeks.
Awesome. Enjoy Preakness weekend, guys. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Trevor McCarthy, everybody, and, of course, Katie Davis and their daughter. And it's one of the biggest – he basically was like one of those – I don't want to say arranged marriages, but it was like the coming together of two, you know, two jockey families. And then you fold in the Migliori's. We'll let Rich, I'm sure Rich will riff on this when he joins us at 10 o'clock. In between, though, Kenny McPeak's going to visit, and we'll talk to Kenny about Dash Attack's win on Saturday, but also coming out of Derby and everything that went on that front and plans, Tis the Bomb, etc. And then, of course, he's got, I think, what you could consider a live enough long shot coming up here toward Preakness. So Kenny McPeak joins us next. Case, there you go. And we'll get Kenny in here. Did I ask Graham about Virginia Joy? I don't think I did. Right? That's Graham. Is it Graham or is it right now I got to go look if it's Graham or if it's because I know I no, it's Chad. What the hell's wrong with me? Chad. Yeah, there you go. That's why I didn't ask. That's why I didn't ask Graham, because it's one of Chad's. There we go. All right. Pick up. Whenever I can clear off stacks of PPs and charts, I'm pleased to do it. So I've also got to find here as we wait for Kenny. Let me find because the Monmouth. There was just one. That's the only thing I had from Monmouth. There it is. There we go. Except that's not. That's the wrong. I know I have it because I. Son of a gun. That's the danger when you've got all these PPs and you're just looking for one or two pages. Save the Belmont, and no good. Now we're into Pimlico. Oh, I should mention, actually, now, as I continue to dig down past the Indianapolis, nice stakes card tomorrow, by the way, that will that came up, obviously, but we'll get into tomorrow probably with John Dooley. Andrew Offerman is going to join us. He'll join us. Keep trying, Case, because he's expecting. I told him 40, so he should turn up. There it is. All right, jeez. Dash Attack, the Munnings colt that I mentioned yesterday, good race with Dean's List, and we'll see what Ken's thoughts are. First Lasix, and you know this is a topic when it comes to Kenny. He's got pronounced and vocal opinion. But Dash Attack was First Lasix in this spot. And there's Kenny McPeak with us now. Kenny, congratulations on Dash Attack's Long Branch win.
Thank you.
Don't know how much you heard there as I was tap dancing, waiting for you. But First Lasix for him, how much of a difference did you think it made?
None. I don't think it made a big difference. I thought that spot was a good, next spot for him. Dropped down. He ran against some bears early on and split his timing of his race a little bit. And I was real pleased. Maybe come back for the Pegasus and, hopefully he's a, Haskell type.
Nice. So you're basically going to just, the road to Haskell. Why not? Are you keeping a string? Because I see that he worked at Monmouth.
Well, he was in on Derby Day, and they canceled, if you remember. And right. So they rescheduled the race. And Kelly Breen handled the colt for me up there because I had a couple of things going on in Kentucky. But his team did a good job. They handled him for me all week and had to work and, owe Kelly a little favor there.
So explain to people what you do at that point. Do you bring him, where do you bring him back after a race like this? I mean, if you're basically going to go and through the string of races, do you just constantly ship him back and forth, or how do you handle it?
Yeah, I trucked him back because that race isn't for another month. And so, but yeah, I went ahead and brought him back to Kentucky. He's at my Churchill barn already. And we'll put a schedule together. We're also going to look at that Matt Wynn at Churchill, and there's the Ohio Derby's another great spot. And we still have a decent group of 3-year-olds that are pointing these kind of races. But right, first instinct's probably come back for the Pegasus.
Nice. Well, Dash Attack is a Munnings, and this is a nice group, and you've been doing this, putting these groups together. This is a Magdalena with Catalyst Stable, Kevin Pollard, and Patty Slevin. This horse, you could tell, had quality about him right off the bat, and feels like there's some fun things to be done with him and lay out a nice plan. And this was a homebred. I didn't realize until just looking now, this was a homebred between Magdalena and Catalyst.
Yeah, we raised him there here in Lexington on Magdalena Farm. We've got a few broodmares, probably keep a dozen, plus or minus. And they foal out every spring. We try to keep mares with some quality. And this mare, Cersei K, was a big, pretty filly, hard-spun mare. And we've had several foals out of her, and this is her first stakes winner. So, and she's got a full sister on the ground that we're looking forward to handling. I think we've decided to race her. And, Rick Greenberg's been with me for, I'm pushing 20 years. And wow. Rick, real enthusiastic about the game. And he loves it. And then Rick brought in a partner, Kevin Pollard, and Kevin's having a blast. This is his second horse, but first good one. So they're really enjoying it. They all came up for the weekend.
Nice. Well, Dash Attack, we'll keep tabs and see if he can continue to move forward out of the Long Branch win. You mentioned the things that went on back in Kentucky. Let's talk about the result and the Derby before we get into Preakness conversation. And, Kenny, you finished 8th and 9th, and, smile happy, and 'tis the bomb. They acquitted themselves, certainly well enough. Your thoughts about the efforts?
Well, I feel like being 8th or 9th. no. I thought that, 'tis the bomb got one at a time here. 'Tis the bomb got off bad, and we knew that that was going to be the key to his race. He ended up way back, and Brian, when he got squeezed leaving there, just kind of settled and took back and tried to negotiate through some traffic. But he's not a horse that overcomes a lot of adversity, certainly on the dirt. He closed in to grab, he cut some links in between the front runners. And then Small Happy, he finished a bit in front of Tis the Bomb. But we thought he was a little jammed up coming out of the race. We sent him over to Dr. Bramlage, and Bramlage gave him a thorough going over. And we are going to give him a month off and then reevaluate. And you'll see him a little bit later in the season. Really nice horse. And we felt like we just needed to back off a little bit. And little dings here and little things bugging him. But no big deal.
Obviously, 'tis the bomb coming out of Turfway and out of the synthetic effort, and the argument against him from a handicapping standpoint was how much of the dirt would he take to? That was the conversation point. What are your thoughts for the season going forward?
Well, there's a chance the horse may be sold here soon, and if that happens, then my goal is to take him to the English Derby. It's been my goal with him all along. I wanted to go for the 2,000 guineas instead of the Kentucky Derby, but he had the points, and we thought, well, we'll give him a run, and then we're going to go back to the turf. He's out. I'm actually going out to watch him train this morning. Anybody follows my Twitter feed, I posted his gallop yesterday over our grass course, and you might enjoy that. Magdalena's got a big grass course, and we're able to prepare horses to run internationally or Kentucky Downs over it. But, he'll go back to grass, and my fingers are crossed that we can get the paperwork done and that he goes to England for the Epsom Derby. I think he's a horse that could run well there, and be really excited about that. Can't win this derby, might as well win that derby.
Yeah, there you go. There's also the Penn Derby, which is on grass. So Smile Happy gets some time off, and talk about Friday. And boy, Kenny, if there was a filly going into the Oaks each day that I watched her, Cocktail Moments was just, to me, just coming into the race fabulously. Every morning she looked like, controlled aggression. She wanted to do more. Then she settled down leading up to the race. Some thoughts about her and where she fits in the filly picture for the rest of the year.
Well, we knew going into the race that it was a bit ambitious. We didn't have any preconceived notion that she was expected to win. We thought that if she could run third or better, that we would be pleased. And we, went into that with Bill Shively, who I was just on the phone with, actually, thinking, okay, let's give her a chance. And she's run well in some stake races, but she hadn't shown that she was quite up to the nests and the secret oaths of the world. And I think we need to probably regroup. We may try to take that A other than allowance race off the table at Churchill because it's such a great purse. And then I'll probably hunt some, you know, a listed stake or a grade three with her if we can do that. You know, of course, that's assuming. And then there's plenty of decent spots for a filly like that later in the season. And I hadn't sorted through which ones are the Iowa Oaks or Indiana Oaks, sure, things like that.
Well, she's got quality, and she certainly looked fabulous. I was trying to get her involved in the exotics. I mean, it did feel like it was a little bit of a stretch to, as a win candidate, but she caught my eye morning after morning.
I'm not sure if she wants to go a mile and an eighth. I think she probably wants to go seven or flat mile. And she'll get a mile on the 16th against the right group. And like I said, she stakes place three times. I mean, that's significant to Mr. Yep. Shively. And we're going to have some fun with her. She's far from finished.
That gets us to the star of the weekend, certainly for the barn. And on Derby Day, Creative Minister's Effort had Paul Matisse on Friday, Kenny, and he was going through. We always do a postscript to the weekend. He thought it was potentially the fastest race of the certainly of Saturday, and enough so that he jumps into the Preakness, and I could tell, you know, from your comments how confident you are in him. Talk about his development and that performance on Derby Day.
Well, we this winter, well, he's the first of all, he was a horse that took a while to come around. And we weren't real happy with the way he was moving as a two-year-old, and he had some gaps in his training because he was just not all there. And then little by little, he seemed to be getting stronger. And in the early winter, in December and January, he's getting stronger and still was not quite there. But I didn't Triple Crown nominate him because I felt like that there's no way he's going to make it. He's not going to make his first start until early to mid-March. And he makes the mid-March race, or the first part of March, and was really ran a great race to be second at Gulfstream. And I was almost happy he didn't win because, you know, the condition of the race, and I knew I had Keeneland where he could run two turns. And so the last two races, he's jumped through those hoops pretty easy. I mean, he's like, and we've worked him against a lot of our better three-year-olds, and he holds his own. So, you know, who's to say, you know, he couldn't be, I mean, I'm going to expect that he can hit the board in these next two, and plan's probably going to be, you know, give him a shot in the Preakness and the Belmont. He's out of a Tappet mare, and we know Tappets do great at Belmont. But, you know, look, you never know. It's a funny game, as we saw last Saturday or Saturday before. You just never know what's going to happen.
Well, a creative cause, and he was a $180,000 yearling at Keeneland. And you mentioned the Tappet mare, bred by Delridge, and he's a player in here in this Preakness. I mean, what would you like to see have happen here from a, you know, from a pace standpoint, from a way the race unfolds? You certainly leave from a spot where Brian can establish position and save ground.
Well, he tucked in the whole race during his race at Churchill, and then he tipped out and kicked yep. on, and I think that's probably a good plan with him here this next or this coming weekend. And let him break and run to the turn and tuck in and find yourself a nice rhythm. And Brian's really good at getting horses in rhythm, and then you know, find out how good he is. We were third in this race with Senior Investment a few years ago, and
oh yeah,
and he was owned by Paul Fireman. And Paul, I think this is a better horse than Senior Investment. And dude, he ran respectable that day to be third. And, you know, look, you get one opportunity. And like I said, I didn't Triple Crown nominate him. I do own 10% of the horse, so I had to pay part of the supplement fee, too. And, you know, look, you got to give these three-year-olds that opportunity. It was an expensive entry, but hopefully it's a wise investment.
Well, you mentioned senior investment. You were third in this with him going back 5 years. And then you got to go back to 2008, Race Car Rhapsody in Big Brown's Preakness was fourth. Harlan's Holiday, oh my gosh, in 2002 behind War Emblem. And then we go back to Tejano Run, your first Preakness starter.
Yeah, we've sniffed around at it. Swiss Skydiver was a magical victory. I mean, I'll never be able to forget that, and a lot of people won't. And, it's a great race. I'm surprised that it's had trouble drawing, nine horses surprises me, which I'm fine with. And I'm hopefully Epicenter's run his best races for the season, but he's going to be definitely the one to beat. It's pretty wide open. Hopefully we can get another one.
Well, you hinted something. I'll ask you. You certainly have had a presence for decades now, mentioning Tejano Run, in Triple Crown races, and you've won two of the three races, looking for that Derby, as so many horsemen are. But what did you make of the bypassing of Preakness with the Derby winner?
I have a hard time training all my horses, much less somebody else's.
Let me put it this way.
No, okay. I don't have any, people make decisions with horses for a lot of different reasons, whether it's me or them. And I can't tell you. I mean, I do think it was a bit of a meltdown Derby. And that does happen. I've won races where everybody just got too aggressive early and it melted down and you came on late because you were the only one waiting. And, but they don't all have to run back in the Preakness. It's a tough test for sure.
It's funny, this morning when I was doing the history, I always like Preakness Week to kind of go through on this date. And one of the stories that is kind of under the radar, going back to Triple Crown history, Majestic Prince, and on this date in 69, he won the Preakness. Then later, of course, he's going to get beat in the Belmont Arts and Letters. But there, at the time, Johnny Longden. Longden didn't want to run in the Belmont. he had to be overruled by the owner. He was going to skip the Belmont after winning the first two legs. So it's not as if there isn't some various precedents over the years that would have been the craziest scenario ever in Triple Crown history had Longden essentially said we're not running.
I know he was a beautiful horse, but I was in elementary school then, and I missed that race.
I love it. Kenny, obviously look forward to seeing you here, and let me look and see, because I didn't check what else you have. Do you have anything else this weekend here?
No, I didn't bring anything else. I had some others that I nominated. Crazy Beautiful is going to point towards the Shawnee at Churchill, and Rattle and Roll we're going to point towards the Matt Wynn.
Nice.
And let's see. I've got Filling in Park on the Nile and Cocktail Moments were nominated to the Black Eyed Susan that neither went. And then we've got some horses lined up for some stakes later in the season. Tis the Bomb. We talked about, and we're getting him ready for turf. He's getting ready to gallop out on my grass course now, and then we're getting a lot of young horses ready. I've sold some of our middle and lower level quality horses, and they claimed a couple off of me Saturday, and we're prepping a large group of young horses in hopes that we're back in the middle of a lot of these nice races next fall or next year.
Well, when you're ready, when you're coming into a Preakness, obviously, you got a big assignment this weekend. Looking forward to seeing you here, and safe trip to Creative Minister and Brian Hernandez Jr. Kenny McPeak, I appreciate it as always.
My pleasure.
Ken McPeak. And Kenny, how are things settled with the Twitter account? Things have smoothed out? I think it did, because I did see he mentioned that he mentioned the issue, if you remember, when we talked to him, I don't know, last month at some point. He had had that the McPeak Racing. Yeah, the McPeak Racing got hacked. And so now you can only follow Kenny at Kenny McPeak. And so here's, in fact, to take a look at that, he's got three videos from yesterday. I saw the first one. I didn't see these other two. And it's really pretty. Tis the Bomb out, essentially on a turf gallop. Very cool. Really nice. So, all right, so Kenny going ahead, going after, is it still the Investec Epsom Derby? A longtime sponsor of the Derby. Thanks to Kenny. Thanks to Trevor. And let's take a top of the hour break. Just a couple of minutes past. We're live at Pimlico. Absolutely glorious day. And by the way, for those of you that are coming here, Friday and Saturday, you're coming for Black Eyed Susan and Preakness. It is going to be very hot. They're looking at 92 degrees both days. And having seen literally every possible kind of weather over the decades here, starting as a fan and infield goer, and then working the infield with the barbecue, and then these last 15 plus years covering the Preakness, it has gone. The extremes include 1 year when it was unbelievable how cold and nasty it was. Just unbelievable. The morning, it was almost freezing rain. It was like in the high 30s, low 40s. And I should really go back and figure out when that was. It'd probably be easy to see it on the chart. It was awful. And, I mean, it got okay later in the day, but it was cold and stinging rain. A tough, tough start to a Preakness day. And then there's days where it's been like what we're going to have Saturday, just broiling down hot. So be prepared. Dress light and airy. I sent Tina a note. I said she was sending me pictures of some options that she was looking at, and I said, whatever you do, make it breathable and comfortable. Rich Migliori is going to join us next, to be followed by Andrew Opperman and Andy Serling. We'll talk to Popo later, and I'm hoping to get a Monmouth update in as well today. Back after this at the races. We're at Pimlico. Hi-ho.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Horsepin. Nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to HollywoodPNRC.com/racing.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for orders only other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
And